Hey everybody, this is Thomas G. Waits. I'm an actor. You might know me from The Warriors or John Carpenter's The Thing or Injustice for All with Al Pacino or lots of other stuff. But anyway, here I am with Rabbi Saul Solomon on the great podcast Dave's Gone By. Mazel tov.
Oh, shalom, my friends. Shalom, friends of the neighborhood. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am thrilled and delighted to be talking with Tom Waits. Now, you know, it's not the scruffy guy with Ricky Lee Jones and all the albums. No, this is Thomas G. Waits, a man who has been on Broadway, off Broadway. He has been in movies with people like Al Pacino, and he's acted with Frances McDormand, a long and varied career. Currently, he still acts, but he also teaches. He does, is it a weekly thing here?
Yes, every Monday.
And we are at the Producers Club in Midtown Manhattan, over between 8th and 9th Avenue on West 44th Street. I'm me, he's Tom Waits. Welcome and shalom to you!
Thank you, shalom.
Now, you're not Jewish, though.
I'm not Jewish, but in a way, aren't we all Jewish?
Tell me in what way?
Didn't we all come from aren't we all descendants of Abraham?
I like to think so.
I like to think so, too. If only more people could think like that.
I'm more of a descendant of Jackie Mason and Lenny Bruce, but okay, yeah. Abraham also, he's in there somewhere. So, I do have to ask you, I mean, you've gone under some different names, and like T.G. Waits or something like that. Is it because of the guy?
Yeah, because of trying to differentiate between the great Tom Waits, and he is great, and I tip my hat to him. He has more musical talent in his fingernails than I could have in my entire soul. And I think he's quite a brilliant songwriter and musician. And also very famous, and, you know, hats off to him. But I, in my own right, am Tommy Waits. A lot of people call me Tommy.
Hello,
that's
Tommy.
Part of the distinct. People in the business especially. Oh, you mean Tommy Waits. So I put in Thomas G. Waits. And then I was doing a movie that was so bad that I thought, aside from take my name off it, what else could I do? So I used T.G. Waits.
Now, this is not the movie that you famously were took your name off. This is much later in your
career. Right, this was later in my career, yeah.
So, but do you ever get a check for the other guy? Do you ever get a phone call, an agent call?
It's funny you should ask me that, because one time, I'm also a playwright. I have my MFA from the University of Iowa in playwriting. And one day, I opened the mail, and it's a letter from Kathleen Brennan. That's Tom Waits' wife.
Yeah.
And she goes, and we knew each other many, many years ago, all of us. So we hung out a few times, you know.
Like when
coffee.
He was doing Bomb and Gilead in the Village, that era?
I think he had just moved to Manhattan.
Wow.
This was the early 80s, maybe 83, 84 maybe. And anyway, I knew Tom and Kathleen, and they had had their first child, and Tom very kindly met me down at Broome Street Bar. We had a few beers. We went and talked. And then later, at another time, I had run into him with Kathleen in the Village. Anyway, I knew her. I can't say we're friends or anything, but she sent me a letter with a check in it because I had written a play about baseball.
What was the play?
I think it was called The Pitcher, and it was about a young boy. It was a monologue. It was a young boy that was pitching in a baseball game, and his father was watching. And he was a great pitcher, but with each pitch, his father stepped further and further away until finally he was pitching so badly that his father finally just turned his back and walked away on him.
Okay.
It's very sad. So Kathleen writes me and says, "Dear Tom, I read your play. I liked it very much. Enclosed is a check for $75 from the publishers they sent to us by mistake. And I just wanted to say to you that every once in a while people go up to Tom in the video store to tell him how great he was on NYPD Blue, which he's never done, of course. And he, instead of argue with him, he just stands there and shakes his head."
I thank you for that story. Thank you for that connection. So now, all the rest of this interview is going to be about this Thomas G. Waits, who, if you know him, you might know him certainly from a film that does not even have his name on it. We're going to get to that. It wasn't your first movie. Your first movie was Joan Micklin Silver directed.
That's right.
What was that?
Joan Micklin Silver produced it. Her husband Ray Silver directed it. It was called On the Yard with the great actor John Hurd.
Oh, yeah.
And Richie Bright was in it, the great Dominic Chianese, James Remar had a small part in it. A lot of great New York actors. David Clennon was in it. A lot of great New York actors. It was a prison movie that was released in 1978. And that is what helped me to get the movie that you're referring to, The Warriors, which is the most famous movie I've ever done, and the movie that I did, in fact, have my name taken off.
Now, I mean, were you, you've told this story before, but you never told it to me or to my five or six viewers. So, were you a brat? Were you full of yourself as an actor and you thought you knew better than the director? Was that the deal?
Yes.
It was Walter Hill, right? The director of The Warriors. Wanderers or Warriors?
Wait, the Warriors.
Warriors, of course, yeah.
It wasn't so much that I was a brat. I was never a brat. You know, because I come from a lower middle class background, poor family, and I was never a brat. I just asked him too many questions, and he was over budget and behind schedule, and the executives were breathing down his neck, and the last thing he needed was some young actor saying, excuse me, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that?
In retrospect, now that every movie is ultra-violent, when you complained back then that why were they making this movie so violent?
Yeah, I didn't think that was the movie we were going to make, you know, when I was offered The Wanderers and The Warriors at the same exact time.
Oh, no wonder I got confused there. Okay, got it, yeah.
So I was 23 years old, and I signed a 3-picture deal with Paramount Pictures, and I thought I was going into business with a guy that, you know, where it was a collaboration, and all of a sudden, we were spending weeks and weeks on people getting the living shit beat out of each other, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know. I mean, now, of course, in retrospect, by comparison, it makes it look like child's play. But at the time...
And you thought it would be a love story, really.
That's right. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a love story. And so when I questioned him on that thematic component, I think he got perturbed with me. And also, let's, you know, take a minute and try to understand his side of the story. He had just released a film, The Driver, with Ryan O'Neill and Bruce Dern, that didn't do very well. He's over budget, he's behind schedule, these movies are extremely expensive, he's got a studio breathing down his neck, and he's got this young punk kid saying, why this, why that?
And he is the director.
And he is the director. And instead of going to my agent, which is what I should have done, and say, listen, would you get these items cleared up for me, because I'm confused about them, because that's what you pay an agent for, to be an emissary, or to intercede on your behalf, shall we say.
At least 15% of the time, yes.
You know, my children are Jewish.
Really?
Yes.
That would mean you married them.
I married.
Oh, the hell with this Warriors Wanderers thing. How did you meet your wife?
Oh, she's the most beautiful woman. Her name's Lisa Greenberg. She's St. Louis, Missouri. She goes to synagogue every Saturday.
Oh, my gosh, she's really Jewish.
Yeah, yeah, and her parents were great people. And she and I met, to tell you the truth, what happened is I was sitting in a diner. I used to do a lot of drinking in those days, you know. So it was the next morning after a long night out, and I was with another woman. And I saw this beautiful woman walk by the diner. And I threw the cutlery down, took out a 10, gives you an idea how long time ago it was, that took care of the bill, and I just followed this woman out the door and down the street, around the corner, and into the local health club, of which I was a member. I watched her teach an exercise class, and I waited for her. And I said, excuse me, could you spot me while I'm lifting weights? And she's like, okay. You know, like, why don't you ask a man to do it? So
not as much fun.
Lifting weights, I said, what's your name? And she said, Lisa Greenberg. And I almost dropped the weights on my chest, and I went, are you Jewish? And she goes, yeah. I go, you don't look Jewish.
And there's a pickup line right there. It's like, oh no, you're attractive. What the fuck would you say that? But anyway,
true.
Okay. And yeah.
And she's a good girl. We had two beautiful children together. We were married for 12 years, divorced for 13, back together for 3, and then she left 3 years ago. That's the story of my life. But I do love and adore her to this day, and I probably always will.
Well, this is really personal, but was it whose fault?
I mean, mine.
Why? What? What did you do? You step around, back to drinking, what?
No. I've been sober a long time.
How have I?
I just, I think I'm a bit of a solipsist.
You go off on tangents? What does that mean?
A solipsist is someone who's self-absorbed.
Huh? Are you an actor?
What? How could that possibly
be? You're not Jewish.
Never go together.
Yeah. Duh.
But I do love the Jews, so.
Thank you. That's yay. Yay.
I do love the Jews. I have to say, I am...
Because they annoy the hell out of me. So I'm glad somebody loves them, I tell you.
They, to me, the most moving experiences I've ever had have been in a Shabbat service on a Friday night when the rabbi oftentimes will take a quote from the Torah and then elaborate upon it and connect it to what's happening in our everyday lives and our need to, let me just quote the most recent, embrace the stranger.
Oh.
And, you know, learn to take care of the stranger. As you know, one of the people that was killed in Pittsburgh used to do free dental work for migrants, and I'm going to start crying if I can.
Because there are dentists that I've wished died. They gave me so much horrible pain. But not this one. But let's talk also a bit more. But again, you had this rapprochement with Walter Hill, who was directing the movie. Mm-hmm. And you, as you have often said, it was a mistake. You took your name off the movie instead of keeping it on there because it wasn't giving you name recognition even if you've fallen out. Mm-hmm. But you met Hill again and you made up.
I tried to make amends, yeah. I called him in the late 80s, and he was nice enough to take my call. And I said, listen, I'm really sorry. And he said, well, it's okay. It's just I got pissed when you took your name off me. And I said, I don't blame him. And I said, I'm sorry. I apologize. And I wrote him a subsequent letter to complete my amends. And that's the end of that. I haven't seen him since. I wish him the best.
Oh, he's still alive?
Yes, he's doing great. I mean,
Walter, if you're watching, if you're listening,
yeah, and he's a very good director, very exciting action director, and maybe I'll get to work with him again someday.
Now, speaking of people that you've worked with more than once,
yes,
hint, well, you did the original off-Broadway David Mamet classic American Buffalo. You were the original kid.
I was the original kid. Well, okay, so the word original, if we're going to be Talmudic...
In New York, yeah.
If we're going to be Talmudic about it...
Yes, we
and,
are.
And really scrutinize the text with reason, the original Bobby was William H. Macy, who is now a big star.
Oh, my God.
Of Shameless and many, many other things. A great, great, great Chicago actor. He was the original Bobby. I think J.T. Walsh played Teach. And I think Lane Smith played Donnie, if I'm not mistaken. That was the original production, directed by Greg Mosier. Then they did it in New York with Bobby Duvall, and John Savage played the part that I played. Kenny McMillan played Donnie.
Wow.
Then years go by, and now we're in the late 70s. That was like the mid-70s. And I went up to Al while I was working with him. After
Al.
Mr. P, as we like to call him, Al Pacino. And I said, listen, you should do this play. And I put American Buffalo on his dressing table. And I thought, well, I'll never hear from this guy again.
Now, he was already known by then.
Of course. He was a huge star. He had done The Godfather and Bobby Deerfield.
But this was after Injustice for All or before?
After.
So you were in that with him. So you knew him from doing that.
Yeah.
We're talking, of course, about the original New York American Buffalo, which you were in with Al Pacino.
Right.
I mean, not the one in the early 70s,
right,
but the one later on. Yeah.
Right. It sort of, I don't want to say rejuvenated, but it sort of re-sparked a great career that he'd already had, but it brought him back to the New York theater scene, and we had Lines Around the Block, and a great actor named Cliff James played Donnie. It's a three-character play. Al was great in it. It's like watching live electricity, you know.
But here's the question. eventually it then moved to Broadway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You did not go with it, did
No, it? Because yeah. I got the movie The Thing.
With John Carpenter directing
right.
it. Right.
Yeah. So I had a choice to either stay in it or leave, and I went to Alan. I said, listen, what should I do? You know, I'm in this hit play with you. A lot of people are seeing it. It's good for my career. And then I have this part in this movie, and he said, you have to do what's best for your career.
And he thought the movie would be?
Yeah.
Do you think that was the right?
I do think it was the right
okay.
decision for me, and it was great. You know, I had a great time working with John Carpenter and Kurt Russell. And
any Carpenter stories?
Yes. My favorite Carpenter story. Although, I don't know if I should tell this, but what the hell, it's probably too late now since I've already started. So first of all, John's an amazing guy.
Okay.
I called him on his 70th birthday, January 16th, to wish him a happy birthday. He's a world-class great guy. And he was when we were kids, you know. He was in his early 30s, I guess, when he did The Thing. Just a really caring, sensitive person and a very good director. And I pissed him off more than once, too. I can tell you that, I'm sure.
What is wrong with you?
Exactly. How to Ruin a Career by Thomas G. Waits. So one night, we were all out drinking in a place called Hyder, Alaska. Hyder, Alaska is on the border of Alaska and British Columbia. So there's no police.
Okay.
If a murder happens, they have to fly the Canadian Mounties in.
Yeah.
And there's nothing there but minors, French-Canadian
Well, don't
minors.
Be touching minors. You can't Amber Alert if you do that. All right, but, okay, sorry.
So Keith David.
Oh, yes.
Who, as you know, is black.
Yes, I do know that.
What?
I think he knows it, too.
The only black person, except for T.J. Carter, who only came in briefly for a drink, and somebody said some. Hey, can you walk like they do on TV? And he said, no, man, I'm from Beverly. Anyway, Keith and I had a few too many drinks. We all did. And we put Keith in the back of a truck and drove him back to the hotel from the bar.
All right.
And it was about 3:00 in the morning. And that night, Adrienne Barbeau just happened to fly in to be with her husband. And we carried Keith and put him in front of John's door and knocked on John's door in the middle of the night, and he opened the door, and there was Keith. He was really pissed off at us the next day. I mean, how dare you wake me up in the middle of the
night? Oh, because he was directing in there, all right. Yeah.
And we were working long, grueling hours, and it was really a stupid child.
Yeah, but it's a
juvenile
practical. Thing. No,
yeah.
It's not so bad. Oh, boy.
He forgave us.
Good.
And John is one of the great—he's one of the great human beings.
I don't think we finished talking about Al Pacino. Your friendship with him, which has continued. You were in the Richard III film that he did. Thank God he didn't make you Salome. But other than that, you've been in a lot of things with him.
Right. He did a movie called Salomaybe, which is about the making of Salome. That's very interesting. He invited me to the screening of that. And I see him at the Actors Studio occasionally because we're both members there. And I try to wish him a happy birthday every year, and I wish him the best. You know, he's doing great. He's a great actor, you know, great guy.
Is he able to be normal? Because he's so famous and so rich, but he can, at that moment, he can just be himself again.
Yeah, you know, he really likes, you know, the sports, like... You know, back when I worked with him, this is before credit cards. Isn't this funny? And the World Series was on. So this was like 1981, I guess. The Phillies and somebody were in the World Series. And we're in rehearsal, and he's like, and we were all living together in this house in New Haven. And he's like, we got to get a TV for tonight. He goes, you guys go to Sears after rehearsal and pick up a TV. I'll give you a check. So we go to this pre-credit card. So you know, so we go and we pick out the TV, and I think it was the stage manager, Mikey Urban, and I, and we go, we'd like to buy this TV, and the check is from Al Pacino, and it's signed, and we're supposed to fill in the amount. She's like, come on. So we had to call him, and she goes, "Can I talk to him?" And I said, "Well, yeah, to get the chance." So she got her chance to talk to Al, and we got the TV, and we hooked it up, and we watched the World Series. And nice. Yeah, no, he's a regular guy.
That's a win-win. Speaking of still a theater, too, yes, American Buffalo was a major off-Broadway hit. Mm-hmm. You were in a Broadway flop of show that closed in one night.
That's
I remember
right.
this opening night. It was with Andy Kaufman.
That's right, the great Andy Kaufman.
In Teaneck Tansy. It was a wrestling play with a wrestling ring in the middle of the thing.
That's right.
Any memories?
Oh, my God, memories.
Like what?
Well, first of all, it was a big hit in London because it was called Trafford Tansy. So, and in England, just by virtue of the fact that you speak with an American accent, to them is just hysterical. So they created these ostensibly American characters. Dean Revel, I think his name was. That was the character I played. And I forget the character Debbie played, but it was a musical about wrestling.
Oh, I forgot it was a musical. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
It was a musical, and it was like the hottest show in town. When they came in to audition, they wanted, you know, they offered Bruce Springsteen the part that I played. And after he turned it down, then they offered it to me. So I felt like I was in pretty good company.
Wow.
I'll take that any day. I'll be his second. Anyway, it was not a very good play. And at one point, they were going to fire Andy because they, you know, what happens in big Broadway plays and feature films usually is that they have to fire somebody. I don't know. Like they fired the first AD in The Warriors also. Very nice guy, but heads roll. When there's big money involved, corporations generally heads roll. So,
and aren't there some directors who kind of have to fire somebody early on just to prove that they're in charge and that they can?
Jose Quintero was like that. The great stage director Jose Quintero would say at the beginning of the rehearsal, "One of you will not be here by the time we open."
Oh, how nice.
Just to put the fear of God into you. And I know a few people that were on the other end of that. But he was quite a good director, and so I guess that was his method of... directors work in very different ways, and sometimes they like to instill fear in people to motivate them. Not my brand.
Yeah, I would hope not.
No, I'm a person of faith and love and courage and, believe it or not, hope.
You call it Trafford Tansy back in England.
Yeah.
Did you have to, like, wrestle?
Yeah,
were you jumping around?
I think they added 4 weeks to the rehearsal schedule just so we could come in and wrestle every day. And we got thrown around and beat up and backs thrown out and bruises. my back looked like a map of South Africa by the time I was there. And it was fairly rigorous and an arduous process. And then it was problematic because the play was not, the book was not very good. The music, you know, could have been a lot better. And let me put it to you this way. It was so bad that one day during lunch, I told a joke. I said, "You know, I loved being married. I was married for 12 years. I'd get married again in a second, only this time I'd marry a Japanese girl. That way my mother-in-law would live in Japan."
That's cute. That's funny.
So the producer overheard Kenny Greenblatt. He said, "Could you put that joke on stage?"
Like, just because it got a laugh. And we need a laugh.
Get so, but Andy Kaufman was so amazing. Mm. As I mentioned, I used to drink quite a lot when I was younger, and I haven't drank in almost 15 years.
Alibi Knuckwood.
Yes.
I mean, did you do the AA thing, or you just...
Yes, yes. I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I won't say anyone else is a member, but I can out myself, because it's my business. But I was drinking quite a lot. So I would stay out drinking late at night with the cast. And the next day, we'd be doing these wrestling scenes. And during the matinee, you know, your body cramps up from the alcohol. So I'm in the middle of this scene with Deborah Harry, and I think I have her up over my head. And my leg shoots straight out like this in a cramp.
Oh, boy.
and I have to get Debbie down, and I'm like, my leg's sticking straight up, and Andy Kaufman knew something was wrong, and he came running up to me, and he starts massaging my leg, and he goes, it's okay, it's okay, it's just a cramp, it's okay, I'll work. And then she's like, you pussy, you faggot, you're afraid to fight me. And he's like, no, it's not fair, it's not fair, time out, time out. And she's like, and fuck you too, and she hits it. Like, we turned
it. So she's trying to stay in character while doing this.
We made a moment out of it.
Oh, wow, wow.
He single-handedly turned that situation from what would be a complete disaster to one of the funniest and most interesting. We should have put it in every night.
Like, wow.
But I think it closed the next day.
Well, here's the deal with him. When he wasn't rehearsing, did he turn into a normal human being?
He was the sweetest, the kindest, the gentlest, the softest character.
So it was, I mean, the camera goes on, he becomes whatever, but he doesn't force everybody to deal with him in character. I mean, with all the respect, you were talking about, I think it was Pacino on another thing, and that if you talk to him when he's in rehearsal, he's going to be in that character that he's in the whole time, and whether camera's running or not. But with Kaufman, no.
With Andy Kaufman was ill at the time.
Already?
Leukemia.
Yeah.
And he was dying.
Yeah.
And he shared that with me. One lunch hour, he was meditating under the stage, and I started up a conversation with him, and it's a friendly guy. He's like, you know, you're really a great actor. I said, oh, thank you. And he said, I'm not well. And I'm trying to use the power of my mind to get myself better. I'm like, well, what's wrong? He said, I have leukemia. I'm in the advanced stages of blood cancer. But I'm going to try to use my mind to... And I was so touched by that guy. And he was such a kind and sweet and gentle man. And such a lovely man. And that's not to mention how great Deborah Harry was. Because, let me tell you something, that chick is... She knew that while I sang, albeit rock and roll, I had a lot to learn as a singer. I had never been officially trained in singing. It wasn't my first. If you like Bob Dylan, if you like Bruce Springsteen, you'd like my voice.
Shlomo Carlbach, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. But she would show me techniques of how to breathe so that I could get the note easier, and how I could, and you know, with such love and such care and kindness, I actually fell in love with Debbie Harry.
Uh-huh.
I had a huge crush on her. Caused a lot of problems in my. This was before the Jewess from St. Louis.
Before the Jewess from St. Louis. Yeah. So was it reciprocated? Did you date?
No.
Oh, well, she was still with.
Always. Loyal as. Loyal to the point of a fault. No, she would never. And she never encouraged me, but she was one of those women that gracefully accepted flirtation, which I admire that in a woman. A woman that knows that you're crazy about her, doesn't give you a hard time about it, doesn't encourage you, but doesn't make you feel badly about it either. I think there's an art to that.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Happens to me and women all the time.
They right.
Throw themselves at me, and I'm just like, I've got my dear wife, Miriam Libby, and our 21 and a half beautiful children. So it's, I'm like, thank you so much. It's nice. If you want to pay me, I'll do anything to you.
That's hysterical.
I'll stay downtown under the dress for hours if you pay me. But
that's hysterical.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So we're talking, reminder for a couple more minutes, with the delightful Thomas G. Waits, who is, the one thing we want to again say is that on Monday nights you teach acting at, was it TGW Studios?
TGW thing? Acting Studio, yes. TGW Acting Studio, you can find it online on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook, Thomas G. Waits. It's also under Thomas Waits, too, if you want to send me a message about the school. It's the greatest acting school in America, if I might add.
All right. Now, what do you offer? Because there are a lot of acting teachers who are here in New York. What is your specialty?
Shakespeare.
Oh.
Because my philosophy is that if you can do Shakespeare, you can do anything. If you can do Shakespeare, you definitely can do Law and Order. The body's over here.
He was? No, he not was. Yeah. No question. question. It was not a noble mind. It was an asshole.
You're funny.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So that's the thing. And your key, though, to Shakespeare is not to declaim and proclaim, but to...
That's right. To make it your own. I mean, to teach people where to breathe and to extract the meaning from the text. And, you know, Shakespeare is healthy for all of us because he opens up centers in our mind. I mean, he wasn't just a great playwright, you understand. He was the greatest writer of them all. Okay, there's a lot of great writers, but he's at the top. Everybody's somewhere underneath Shakespeare. Everybody tips their hat.
Even Jacqueline Suzanne. Even she.
Certainly Philip Roth and Tolstoy.
Well, they're closer.
They're closer.
Now, let me also ask you, and we're talking to Thomas G. Waits here, you generally act, and you're still acting occasionally.
Yes. I have an episode of The Punisher coming out on Netflix. I think they drop in January 19, and I'm in the 6th or 7th episode as a villain.
Ooh.
And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm, you know, I still audition for things, and I'll be directing a play. I can't say what play because we don't have the rights to it yet, but we're going to be directing a play in January. And then I'm also a playwright, and I've been offered an opportunity to direct my own play, Macaire, which is a 19th century gangster musical based on a story by Robert Louis Stevenson, and I wrote the music to it as well.
Wow!
Yeah.
So where's this going to be done?
It's going to be done at the Courtyard Theatre in London.
Whoa! Oh,
yeah, it's a 175-seat theatre in East London, and we're supposed to start rehearsal for that in May, late May of 19, yeah.
Oh, Mazel. Now, and speaking also of directing, like, about 4 years ago, you directed a short movie.
That's right.
With
Joe Mantegna.
And what was it called?
It was called The Rife Machine.
The
Rife Machine.
R-I-F-E, the Rife, yeah.
The Rife Machine is, it's out there. It's a machine that supposedly can cure cancer.
Oh, okay.
The guy's name was Rife. He invented a machine based on sound waves. I got Francis Fisher and Joe Mantegna to star in it, and I directed it, and I won some Best Director award at some festival that I can't remember.
No, but Mazel Tov on that. What I want to know is, like, it's one thing to go and be hired, as it were, or to direct a show for a couple of weeks. You know, raise a few thousand dollars, you do it, it's done. But to direct a film, did you kickstart? Did you go fund? Was there a producer? How do you get to make short film?
Yeah, I think the budget was $38,000 or $40,000.
I won't have that in the bank.
Exactly. And I got Joe to do it as a favor to me, mostly because of J.J. Johnston, who is a good friend of David Mamet. And then I got Frances to do it. She's a good friend of mine. And it just came naturally. You know, I've been doing movies since I'm 21. So,
acting.
Movies.
Right.
So directing movies just came. I just was like, okay, let's camera here, there. I just know. I know where it's. I've been doing it so long.
Okay, yeah.
I know what a master shot is. I know what a medium close up is. I know what a close up is. I know when to shoot a close up, how to shoot a close up. I know how to get the best out of actors.
But who financed? Were there producers, or did you?
There was a producer. Yeah. Yeah. So it was good. Yeah, I really would like to direct another film very soon, and I'm working on that. Yeah.
Omit Mazel.
Yeah.
So look at all the things you're doing just in 2019. You got your own play, you're directing in London.
Mm-hmm.
You got another show that you wanted to do. You can't tell me what it is yet.
In January at the Jean Frankel Theater.
Yeah.
And of course, you never know what else comes up along the way. You know. You might get a surprise here and there. It depends on what the agent sends you that day.
Do you have to still audition?
Yeah.
Or they expect you to be a type, and they just call you in and they...
No, a few times. Like, I've been offered, I think it's 2 movies and 1 Law & Order were straight offers, where they just called up and said, hey, you know, what's Tom doing? Is he interested, available? Will he do it? They send the script. But mostly I self-tape and or go into the office and audition. Either way, it's okay with me. It's anytime you get a chance to act, it makes you better.
Nice.
I have no problem auditioning. I'll audition like that, and I have a good memory and a good mind, an agile mind, so I pick it up quickly and take it up off the page and to the other person, and make it happen. You know, you go in that room and you make something happen.
Is that what you teach? It's because you deal with Shakespeare, but do they come to you as like, I have to audition for
yes,
this commercial?
Yes, of course. I'll help them with everything. My students have done tons of TV, and I've had a lot of successful students. Alfred Molina was a student
of
mine.
Oh, my goodness.
Vinny Pastore was a student of mine.
Oh, he's been on this show, by the way. Yay.
Has he really?
Yes, say hello to him. By
yes,
the way.
Yes. He's a dear friend. I've known Vinny for years. He was driving a limo when he came to me. And because I taught him the basic fundamental rules of improvisation, he was doing that movie with De Niro, The Awakenings.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I love it.
And the director said, is there anybody here that knows how to improvise? And he put his hand up, and because I had him do animal exercises, and he was a gorilla.
Well, yeah, I can understand why he would pick that one.
And he
as
did it.
As opposed to a gazelle. But,
and he, right, exactly. He did it, and he got bumped up to a SAG. Yeah.
Oh, Mitt Mazel.
Yeah.
So, and what the secret to improv is more than just saying yes, or not.
Well, that's a critical... Yes and.
Yes and, right, yeah.
But you have to establish where you are, you have to establish what you're doing. Most of all, most importantly, what do you want? And you have to know the person. So it can't be, who are you? No, it's Moishe, how you doing?
Oh,
you
yeah.
said you never ate pork. What are you doing here?
What can I tell you? It's
I just ordered a baked apple, and this is how it came.
You made a joke. You know that joke. That's a marvelous joke. Good for you. Oh, what a marvelous way to end this delightful conversation with Thomas G. Waits. Please give them again the website
yes.
where they can find out.
Thomas G. Waits Acting Studio, TGW Acting Studio. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find us. We're all over the place. I'm easy to track down, and it's at the Producers Club every Monday night, 7 to 10. Just get in touch with me. I'll hook you up with my assistant, Trent. And we'll get you going. It's the greatest acting studio in the world. Not just America. In the world.
Entire.
In the world.
All right.
And that's a promise I write in blood.
This I do not want to see. But what I'd like to see you, first of all, in my shul. You haven't been yet. It sounds like you could be almost convertible. I'm thinking.
I'm thinking about it.
Oh, did I have to do any surgery stuff?
No, that's been taken care of.
You're ready. You're ready.
I'm ready.
If you need someone to convert, I'm there. But for now, I want to thank you so much, Thomas G. Waits, for being with us in the neighborhood. Shalom to you.
Shalom to you and the world. Peace, my brothers.